It's relaxing to be with the people of God, and I appreciate that. It's very encouraging to hear others enjoying the song service and enjoying the fellowship that we can experience in being here. That's very refreshing to me. But that's not where we live all together every day. Sometimes we feel it would be nice to maybe live in a camp meeting type environment. But I believe God would like for us to be lights wherever we are. So consequently, that puts us in positions of being under pressure and feeling that we are being prompted by outside forces to make decisions and choices that would be detrimental to us. I'd like for us to look at an old story, familiar scriptures to all of us, and start out to say this, as a young child, I grew up hearing all of the Old Testament stories and in family worship. Family worship was a high priority in our home, and I look back on that with fond memories. And thinking of all those stories that I've heard from the time I was big enough to understand what my parents were saying almost, these stories are so familiar to me that they can become commonplace if I'm not careful. But I'd like for us to turn to the third chapter of Daniel. It starts out here and says, Nebuchadnezzar the king made an image of gold, whose height was 60 cubits, and the breadth thereof 6 cubits. And he set it up in the plain of Dura, in the province of Babylon. Then Nebuchadnezzar the king sent together the princes, the governors, the captains, the judges, and the treasurers, the counselors, the sheriffs, and all the rulers of the provinces, to come to the dedication of the image which Nebuchadnezzar the king had set up. So the setting here is where King Nebuchadnezzar had made this tremendous great golden image and set it up. And he wasn't a spontaneous thing. He planned to have a dedication service, a dedication of this big image. And I would venture to say that there was a lot of fanfare that went along with this. There might have been vendors selling cotton candy and all of those other things along the way. I don't know, but I believe it was a big event. And I believe it had been scheduled well in advance. And I believe that, well, we know it had been scheduled and well in advance because King Nebuchadnezzar had taken the time and the preparation to ensure that it would go without a ripple. He brought his furnaces along with him and set them up and had them. I don't believe they were just sitting there cold when they started this ceremony. I think he already had a fire going in them. And there was probably a little smoke coming out of the furnaces over there. So we have this setting. In my mind, there was many more people there than there are here this morning. People that you'd rub shoulders with on a daily basis. There were people that they didn't know, but there were a lot of people that they did. These three young men that are going to be called on the carpet in this chapter had associated with these people. They were co-workers, and I don't know exactly what their duties were on an everyday basis, but it's quite possible that when they filed in and came into position in front of this image and was hearing the king speak, that they were standing right in the middle of the fellas that they seen every day. And we are around the people that our neighbors and our co-workers and our school classmates and all of those things. It is a similar type setting, but it was a vast number. And it wasn't just just the neighbor across the street that was there. There was everybody in the kingdom, it looked like. There was a tremendous number of people there, quite possibly thousands, standing in front of the image. And the command was given, we know the story, for everybody to bow before this image at the proper signal. And when the signal was given, these three young men didn't bow. And that's where the pressure, right before the signal was given, I'm wondering what these young men felt like. I don't believe that they were just naturally strong or overly confident and arrogant young men. I believe they were normal, just like you and I. And I believe they felt the heat, not so much of the furnace right then, but the heat and the pressure of the situation. I feel like they were very aware of the impending consequences should they not bow. Sometimes, I'll back up and say it this way, the devil always puts us in a place where we feel like this is the first time anyone has been here. You're in a position that no one ever else has faced quite this crucial. There's more pressure on you today than there ever was maybe in the past generation. Maybe you say that your parents never had to face this kind of situation. And it doesn't look like there's any other choice but to bow. Have you ever heard someone say, I didn't know what else to do? And maybe they use that as an excuse or to justify bowing before some type of image or some type of thing that the enemy has set up. But these young men and the situation they were in was very real. And I probably am not doing a very good job this morning, but I'd like for us to refresh in our mind how much pressure they felt and how intimidating it was to them. When you're on the job and your coworkers are discussing alcohol consumption and they turn to you and tell you that there's nothing wrong with doing that, you're under pressure. When everyone else, we hear this sometimes, everyone else is doing something, we feel the pressure. And for most of these folks that was here on this day, it was not, the furnaces weren't real necessary because they didn't have any moral fortitude in themselves. They didn't have any allegiance to anything but whatever Nebuchadnezzar wanted them to do. And they wouldn't have had to bring the furnaces. And I don't think they brought the furnace just for these three men, but they brought them just in case. And there was a tremendous, you know, the devil makes lots of plans in his system to make sure that we bow and that we give in. The devil makes all kinds of preparations just to ensure that in case we had a second thought and wanted to be different, that we would feel a little pressure to go ahead and bow and to yield. So the devil had this, represented here by Nebuchadnezzar, had it all set up. The signal was given. Everybody bowed but these three. And I can see the men that was standing around Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego maybe pulling on their clothes and saying, "Get down. Don't you know you're supposed to bow down now? Don't make a fool of yourself." And maybe kicking them a little bit and saying, "Come on now, don't do this." And they felt the pressure and the heat. And I can only imagine what it would have been like to have been there for myself. And this has taken this story in my mind to a different dimension than when my dad and my mom used to read it. And we'd heard it so many times, we knew that they come out without the smell of smoke on them. So it was commonplace. But the reality of the situation was that they felt a tremendous amount of pressure. So in the 14th verse, we find Nebuchadnezzar spake unto them. This is after somebody had pointed out, or quite possibly Nebuchadnezzar was standing there looking out over the crowd. And when he seen these three not bow down, I can see his eyes kind of bug out in the front of his head, and maybe the blood vessels stand out in his forehead, and him holler for someone, some of the guards, or maybe some of his soldier, military, who are those people? Bring them up here. So he got them up there, and Nebuchadnezzar says to him, said unto them, is it true, O Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, do not ye serve my gods, nor worship the golden image which I have set up? Now it's more than just the folks that's around him. They're really up there on the front lines now. He says, now if ye be ready, that at what time ye hear the sound of the cornet, flute, harp, sackbut, kinds of and psaltery and dulcimer and all kinds of music, ye fall down and worship the image which I have made well. But if ye worship not, ye shall be cast the same hour into the midst of the burning fiery furnace. And who is that God that shall deliver you out of my hands? I hope, with the help of the Lord, you're prompted this morning to think about some of those high-pressure situations you've been in. And quite possibly, or I would say most likely, none of us have been in the situation exactly like this one. But we've had high-pressure situations. I remember in high school, came up time for us to have our pictures taken for the annual, or the yearbook. And we were all to wear nice clothes that day. And all the young men were encouraged to wear a suit jacket, and I did. And we got there, and we were standing in line to get our picture took. And everyone else had their nice shirt on and a sport coat and a necktie. And they got up to me, and they said, you forgot your necktie. So, well, we've got one here. We've got several different kinds, just in case somebody forgot. So I felt the pressure. And I had to tell them, no, I didn't forget. If I'd wanted one, I would have one on. If I felt like that's something I wanted in my senior picture that was in the yearbook, I would have. But I felt the pressure. Was it just like Shadrach and Meshach? No, because they didn't have a fiery furnace there and they weren't threatening my life. But I felt the pressure. And my classmates were all there around me, just like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. His associates were right there. And I felt the heat. And you've had those situations too. The decisions and convictions you have had, there's been times where it's been called to the forefront, and you felt some pressure. So Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were standing there, and they were given the option. And Shadrach, it says in the 16th verse, Meshach and Abednego answered and said to the king, O Nebuchadnezzar, we're not careful to answer thee in this matter. It doesn't mean that they were reckless. It doesn't mean that they were offhandedly. They didn't say this in a context of, we know the fire won't hurt us. That's not how they said that. They knew that the words they said were going to incriminate them. They knew that. They knew they were opening themselves up for whatever kind of retaliation that Nebuchadnezzar had in mind. And they said, we're not careful. What they meant was, is our minds made up, and this is where I'm going to stand. This is the thing. I cannot back up on this conviction. I cannot back up on this clarity of vision of who I'm supposed to bow down to and who I'm not. I can't back up on this. So he says, I'm not careful to answer thee. It says, if it be so, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us out of thine hand, O king. Now that was a real slap in his face, because Nebuchadnezzar was the most mighty king on earth at that time. We know that our God is able to deliver us out of your hand. And he's thinking, in his mind, he said, well, what are you doing here? You're a captive. I'm the one that conquered you. But if not, they went on to say, be it known unto thee, O king, that we will not serve thy gods, nor worship the golden image which thou hast set up. There was a lot of pressure there that day and at that time. And they felt the heat, maybe literally, but I know emotionally and mentally they felt the heat. And you know, it wouldn't have mattered how much the king wanted to spare these young men or how much he liked them. They had been maneuvered into a position where he could do nothing else but put them in the furnace. He couldn't change his mind now if he wanted to. So, we know the end of that story. And I'm thinking today about the situations of honesty that we're faced with. You know, we're faced many times with opportunities to be less than honest, and we feel the pressure. We're faced with opportunities that would violate our moral integrity with the Lord. There's all kinds of opportunities for immorality. And to think of the pressure that we feel. We feel pressure from society, those all around us, about the way we dress. We feel pressure to do something different. We feel pressure when we decide and have the conviction to trust God for our bodies. We feel pressure. And you know, this is something that's really changed in my generation. We feel pressure about not speaking up for Christ in our public assemblies. I'm thankful that a couple of graduations that we've been to this year, the audience appreciated and applauded anything that was said that supported contact with God. And it made me feel like there was hope in our nation. But you know, there's a lot of places that it wouldn't have been appreciated. That it might have caused, if the same words were said in a different setting, it might have caused an uproar. And it might have caused a lot of dissension. But it didn't, and I was thankful for that. But it seems like our nation is going more and more to putting pressure on us to not say anything about the power of Christ in our individual lives. So we feel this kind of pressure. And quite possibly there's someone here today that feels like the enemy is really clamping down on you. You feel pressure to fall in line with public opinion. Or to do something that's quote-unquote politically correct. I'm not talking about being careless or reckless with what we do and what we say, but I'm talking about not bowing and not bending to the pressure that the devil has out there. We think about the situation that Stephen found himself in over in Acts, the 6th chapter. And we read this. Read this all of my life too. 6th and the 7th chapter of Acts. Stephen appears bigger than life. A man that had the courage to stand up for God and for what he believed in. And if we could read this, but maybe we won't for the sake of time. But starting in the 8th verse of the 6th chapter, it says that Stephen, full of faith and power, did great wonders and miracles among the people. And there arose certain of the synagogue, which is called the synagogue of the Libertines and the Cyrenians and Alexandrians, and of them of Sicily and Asia, disputing with Stephen. And they were not able to resist the wisdom and the spirit by which he spoke. Stephen was a man that had the anointing of God on his life, I do believe. So they called him in question and put him on the carpet. And maybe 14th verse of this chapter, it says, "For we have heard him say," this is the accusation, "that this Jesus of Nazareth shall destroy this place and shall change the customs which Moses delivered us. And all that sat in the council looking steadfastly on him saw his face as it had been the face of an angel." 7th verse says, "Then said the high priest, are these things so?" Here's the opportunity to bow. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego was told, we're going to do this again. Just in case there was a misunderstanding, we're going to do this again. When you hear the music, if you go ahead and bow, everything will be all right. The high priest turned and said to Stephen, "Are these things so?" Here was the opportunity for Stephen to say, "I never said nothing like that. I'm on your side." Here was an opportunity for him to bow, but he didn't. And I'm not going to read this 7th chapter, but you could. And he started way back there and give them a message of why he stood where he stood. And all the way down here, the 54th verse, says, "When they were heard these things, they heard Stephen unwilling to bow and to bend." I'm not trying to be a motivational speaker and get you all pumped up in your own ability to withstand the tactics of the devil. But I want you to notice that we have an ally here. 54th verse, it says, "When they heard these things, they were cut to the heart, and they gnashed on him with their teeth. And he, being full of the Holy Ghost, looked up steadfastly into heaven and saw the glory of God and Jesus standing on the right hand of God." Dear ones, I believe that when we get in these high-pressure situations, that Jesus is paying attention to our situation. There are many times in our life that I feel like Jesus might be tempted to bite his fingernails, so to speak. You know how it is when something gets real tense? Maybe we'll move up on the edge of the seat if we're sitting down, and maybe we'll be tempted to chew our fingernails a little bit, and maybe it'll be so urgent that we'll want to stand up and get a little closer look. I don't see Jesus sitting back in his recliner, if he's got one, when we're in the heat and feeling the pressure. He wasn't relaxed when Stephen was under pressure. Stephen got a vision. He was able to see Jesus not just sitting at the right hand of the Father, but he was standing up and observing the pressure that Stephen was under. And I believe that he was interceding with groanings that we can't utter to the Father to give Stephen the strength. You know, Stephen went through stoning. And Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego went through a furnace that it says it was heated 7 times hotter. Let's go on and read a little more. And it says, "Behold, I see the heavens open." He goes and tells them. You know, when we get under pressure and we get a vision of Jesus' care and compassion for us, it will give us the strength and the courage to speak up even more. And Jesus gave Stephen that. Stephen says, and he said, "Behold, I see the heavens open and the Son of Man standing on the right hand of God." And they cried out with a loud voice and stopped their ears and ran upon him with one accord, and cast him out of the city and stoned him. And the witness laid down their clothes at a young man's feet, whose name was Saul. Oh, dear ones, Jesus was paying attention. And whatever your situation is today, I believe he's paying attention. If you feel like you're standing alone, Stephen did. If you feel like you're standing with just a couple others, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego felt that too. And they didn't bow. We find that when they were in the furnace, somebody come to be with them. And even Nebuchadnezzar was able to recognize that it was like the Son of God was in there with them. When they was under the pressure, and you think your pressure is high when somebody says, well, everybody else is doing that. Well, I don't see nothing wrong with that. Times are different now. We hear those kind of expressions, don't we? Well, that's not necessary. And we feel pressure. But that's not very high compared to what Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego felt. And it's not very high compared to what Stephen felt. But you know, God will be there for you in those times. Notice in Isaiah 50 and 7, I believe he's talking, the prophet here is talking about Christ. For the Lord God will help me. He's going to help you. Whatever high pressure situation you may be in today or may get into in the future, says the Lord God will help me. Therefore shall I not be confounded. Therefore have I set my face like a flint. And I know that I shall not be ashamed. You think Stephen or those other three were ashamed that they had took the stand that they did? Don't think so. You know, the whole dedication ceremony for that image was disrupted. And everybody's attention was focused on the one true God because three men didn't bow under pressure. The whole thing was spoiled. I don't know what they did with that thing, but it was scrap metal when God got done with it. The pressure that those three men felt on the time of being called on in question, and when everybody was there to witness them going into the furnace and them coming out without any ropes on it. Everybody witnessed the soldiers that put them in there falling down dead. Everybody heard the king say, "Didn't we put three men in there? Look, there's another man in there. He looks like not the image of this guy created, but the Son of God in there." So when the three men came back out, the whole thing of dedicating this big golden statue, I've got to believe, was abandoned. I don't believe Nebuchadnezzar said, "All right, sorry for that distraction. Let's go on with our dedication ceremony." It was in utter chaos, and they couldn't complete that. And whatever purpose he had for that big image was spoiled. All of the fanfare and building up for this big event was totally derailed because three men didn't bow under pressure. And Jesus, the prophecy of Christ is that he's going to set his face like a flint. He wouldn't be ashamed. These men were not ashamed that they took the stand that they did. Flint is a very hard rock. In fact, if you hit it with a piece of steel, sparks fly off of it. It's not talking about being calloused. And it's not talking about being so hard that you're not uncompassionate. It's talking about being steadfast and unmovable. And not bowing under pressure. I'm so glad that Christ has been there for us in our lives. I'll tell you another high-pressure situation that I experienced personally. And there's been many others. Some of them not near the magnitude. But the pressure I felt the day our little girl was born was hard. It's hard for me to pass on the pressure that I felt And when I went in and told the doctor that was in charge and was the one that had made his suggestions and recommendations, when I went in and told him that we weren't going to follow his recommendations, at that time, he looked at me for several moments. It felt like minutes. And it might have been, I don't know, but he was sitting in a chair, and I remember him turning around and just in his little office chair, and I was standing there beside him when I told him that we wouldn't let him take our little girl in the helicopter. He turned around and looked at me for a while, and he said, "I think you're making a mistake." And I didn't know what he was going to do next or what kind of pressure he was going to put on me. But I'm not the only one that's been in that position. There's others here today that's felt those kind of pressures. But I'm thankful that we have a high priest that's touched with the feelings of our infirmity and our pressures. Now let's go to Hebrews and end with this verse, these verses, Hebrews 4. Start reading in the 12th verse. It says, "Therefore sprang there even of one..." I'm sorry, I'm in this wrong chapter. Hebrews 4 and 12 says, "For the word of God is quick and powerful and sharper than any two-edged sword, piercing even to the dividing asunder of soul and spirit, and of the joints and marrow, and is a discerning of the thoughts and intents of the heart." The Lord is able to perceive exactly where you're at, and your attitude, and your disposition, and your convictions. He knows all about that. We're not hiding anything from Him. If you're a fake, He knows that too. But if you're genuine and you're sold out to live for the Lord, and you do not want to yield to the pressures that life puts on us, and you're crying out in desperation of, "Lord, I need to see your vision. I need to see you standing up." He knows that too. But if you're just trying to put on a front until those that you go to church with disappear, and then you're going to do something different, the Lord knows that. The Lord knows that. He says here that he is able to discern the thoughts and intents of the heart. It says, "Neither is there any creature that is not manifested in his sight, but all things are naked and open unto the eyes of him that with whom we have to do. Seeing then that we have a great high priest that is passed unto the heavens, Jesus the Son of God, let us hold fast our profession." Don't give up, don't bow, don't bend. Don't allow the pressure that you feel that's being exerted on. Don't succumb to that. "We have not a high priest which cannot be touched with the feelings of our infirmities." The three Hebrew children were accompanied during their high pressure. And Stephen was able to see a vision of Jesus standing. He says, "But was in all points tempted, like as ye are, as we are, yet without sin." He's felt the pressure too. He felt the pressure of the enemy forces against him. He can't, it's so good to come in contact with people that have experienced similar problems that we have. Whether it's in a temporal aspect or in our relationships, or it's so good to know people that have been where we've been, because they can give us so much insight and so much help. He said he was tempted like ye are, yet without... He didn't bend. He didn't bow. He didn't fall under the pressure. He says, "Let us therefore come boldly unto the throne of grace, that you may obtain mercy and find grace to help in time of need." I'm glad that last phrase is in there, because there are times that we feel more pressure than others in our lives. I'd venture to say that all of us feel kind of an overshadowing pressure from the enemy to give up, to throw in the towel. It's just something we live with. knowing that the enemy would like to overpower our testimony. But there are times when the pressure seems to go up exponentially. There are times when we're called on the carpet, when we're singled out. You believe what? Well, everybody knows it's this way. And you say, no, that's not the way I understand it. We've been in those places, and we've had to take the position of, I disagree. I can't go along with what you're saying. And we feel the pressure of that. And this verse tells me that there will be grace to help us in those times. There will be the empowering presence of God to help us during those times that we feel like the most simple thing is to yield a little bit, to give in, to succumb to the pressure. So whatever you're experiencing today, I want to challenge you and want to encourage you that our God is still there. Jesus is still the same today as he was way back then. He's the same one that was prophesied about in Isaiah. He's the same one that was there for the disciples. He was the same one that was there when Stephen looked up and seen the vision of him standing at the right hand of the Father. And he'll be there for us in the pressures that we feel. So I don't want you to be discouraged if you're feeling pressure. Others have felt it too. And the Lord's brought them through, and the Lord will bring us through too. You pray for me. I know I'm not met the last high-pressure situation in my life. I know there'll be others. But I want to come through with victory in my soul. So you pray for me.